Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolecast. Bud put out two episodes last week. Would encourage our listening audience to go back and give those a shot if they have not already encountered them. And this will be the second of a recruiting-focused podcast. The previous one featured the offensive side of the ball, or at least the recruits on the offensive side of the ball that Florida State had either had committed or were still heavily involved with at this point. We will move to the defensive side of the ball, have just a little bit of time for a catch-up on information of a couple of the prospects that we covered in last week's discussion on the offensive side of the ball, bring you up to date on any kind of new updates with them, and just try to bring you up to speed, and we'll do these periodically up until signing day. I realize the information may be repetitive or redundant to some of you, but we want to kind of be as inclusive as possible and let this be a just something that is kind of able to have the audience build upon as Florida State puts together their 2017 class. So with that, Bud, we will move into the recruiting focus. We'll focus on the defensive side of the ball. Before that, just go ahead and let you know that the audio level will be as good as we can have it. There's a couple different things going on right now that you may have some background noise. So we'll do our best to minimize any kind of noise and give you the best product possible. Large part of us being able to do recruiting-focused podcasts or just have the repetitive and constant content that we've tried to put out throughout the last calendar year is because of our partnership with the people at Louisiana Hot Sauce. They have been instrumental in allowing us to do these with more repetition, more frequency, and hopefully bring you a better quality product on the whole. So thank you to them. Want to really thank the listening audience for how much participation and engagement they've had with Louisiana, particularly via social. I think last week we had just a really impressive amount of people who tweeted either dishes they were preparing or dishes they had made and incorporated Louisiana hot sauce. That is awesome, folks. Really want to thank you for that. And just one other thing, if we could ask of you, is to follow them, particularly on Twitter. So if Twitter is a platform that you use, it would mean a lot to us if you just go and click the follow button. They are not abusers of the platform by any means. You will not lose your timeline with what they put out. So I would just ask if you feel comfortable doing that. That would certainly mean a lot to Bud and I. And with that, we'll get into the podcast.
Let's do that, man. Thanks to Louisiana Hot Sauce, as always. Great sponsor. And certainly we would not be doing this early morning out of the kindness of our hearts twice a week. So a couple of little quick updates. If you listened to our last episode, which was mostly concerning offensive recruits, we have a few new updates there. Florida State went down and visited tight end Trey McKitty. At the last podcast, we said that this was a mostly an Auburn-Florida State battle. I now get the impression this is more of a Florida State-Miami battle for the three-star tight end out of IMG. Got a couple questions from listeners about why Florida State is trying to take two tight ends. Don't they already have a lot on the roster? Well, look, Florida State's not a spread team. Yes, you do already have several tight ends on the roster. You have they're going to be redshirt juniors next year in Ryan Izzo and Maven Saunders. And you do have Nasir Upshur, who will be, I believe, a redshirt freshman. I don't think he played on special teams this year. And then you also have Alexander Marshall, who is an incoming freshman. And you have Jeremy Kerr, who I believe will be a senior next year. That is a lot of tight ends. However, tight end is one of the most difficult positions to play as a young player because you have to know the route concepts like a receiver and you have to know the blocking assignments like a lineman, and that's pretty tough. Additionally, it's a position where having some additional physical maturity can also really help. So getting a guy like McKitty in and having him sit for a little while would certainly benefit his career so he can learn the offense. And I think Florida State, if they can, would like to get in sort of a position where they not relying on young tight ends. That doesn't mean to say that they cannot play young tight ends, but I don't think they want to really rely on those guys. The McKitty visit apparently went well. I think Florida State does stand a good chance to get his signature. He's an early enrollee. Speaking of early enrollees, DJ Matthews, who likes to kind of play around on Twitter and mess with some fans who don't know better, has officially shut down his recruitment and is all in on FSU. That's their four-star receiver, who I believe, and I think I've seen them all, is the best slot receiver in the nation. Really elite-level athlete, great quickness, great agility, and really good ball skills. So a player who I think is going to have a shot to play early. And then also Cam Akers, Florida State went in home on Sunday, as did Ole Miss and Tennessee and Georgia. I still think this is primarily an FSU-Ole Miss-LSU battle. I know there was a lot of rumors over the weekend that Tennessee had gotten in pretty hard in the sweepstakes. But, man, I think this is I have a hard time seeing him go there. Maybe I'll be shocked. I don't really think Georgia has much of a shot. I know they went in home, but, sometimes teams that don't have much of a shot with players do go in home. See FSU trying to go in home with Baron Browning, and then he commits to Ohio State on the same day. So Akers, the number one running back in the country, according to some, number two consensus, or composite, rather, out of Clinton, Mississippi. We'll see. I mean, this is a player who I think would have a chance to start for FSU as a true freshman against Alabama in the Dome. And I think you got to like the position FSU's put itself in. Now, it's hard to pull kids from Mississippi, as we've seen in the past. And Ole Miss really needs this kid. But, you know, I think Florida State has done a good job on him. I'm not sure I'm going to predict him to FSU, but, you know, I think that they've done about as good a job as recruiting him as you can. They got him in early, multiple visits, family members down early on, familiarity with the school, likes the coaching staff, likes that, you know, you can put up Dalvin Cook type numbers and get those carries. I think you got to be pretty happy with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another good sign if you're a Florida State fan. It very much was kind of acknowledged for the first time that I saw, at least from the Ole Miss side of things, that Florida State had emerged is an interesting use of the word, but just the acknowledgement that Florida State was very much a real contender in this thing. And that was the first time that I had seen some of their pay sites and some people closer to the Ole Miss program acknowledge that for the first time. So that's a little bit of an interesting development if you try to glean whatever information is possible from the other side of informational input. So something to keep your eye on. I mean, Akers is just a incredible player. It's a guy that we've talked about for 6 months now, as far as Florida State having a more legitimate chance than other people had realized or acknowledged up to that moment. So Akers is a name that listeners would not be unfamiliar with and is really one of the more talented kids in his class overall, but certainly the largest remaining target for Florida State at this point.
And he's somebody who actually plays quarterback in high school, you know, if you've watched his film.
And has a nasty, nasty highlight tape doing so. I'm not comparing him physically so much, but his tape as just a raw athlete playing quarterback is very reminiscent of watching Anquan Boldin play high school quarterback for Pahokee, I guess 20 years ago or so. But it's incredible what he did in the state championship game is hilarious just to watch. It's a 7-touchdown performance against Pearl High School, which is one of Mississippi's better programs. He's everything that you could make him out to be. Just an exceptional high school talent.
It's reminiscent of that Dalvin Cook guy against Armwood as a senior. You know, it's just, oh, there's no way he has an angle here. Boom, he's out the gate. You know, I know somebody in our Slack chat this morning on Tomahawk said that just watching it in the different positions, but athletically, Percy Harvin-like.
See that?
I don't know if Akers has that top end You know, I think he has good top end. I don't know if he has I don't know what Percy ran at the combine, but they're both like thickly built athletes with real explosion and the ability to speed cut, which is very, very rare at that size.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Cam Akers, now we wait. You know, does he announce his commitment tomorrow? Does he do it at the All-Star game? Don't know. But we're ready, and we'll see.
I was going to make some disparaging remarks about Tennessee getting in on a kid late and how that happens, but no need for that, bud.
All right, Ingram, now it's time to discuss our second sponsor of the show. That is Madison Social of the For the Table restaurant group there in College Town, right in the shadow of Doak Campbell Stadium. Great place for food and drink. Madison Social, if you've not been, and I know several of our listeners have been, and they've tweeted us their great experiences there. It's an upscale sports pub grub, right? Not just your typical greasy nonsense, but it's, you know, really high quality burgers, good drinks, great draft beer selection there. I don't know how many taps they have, but I'd probably need to take off my shoes to count them all. Really a great spot to enjoy in Tallahassee. Also, their sister restaurant, Central, right next door. It's upscale Italian, but with a casual feel and casual pricing, a creative menu. Know a couple chefs in Tallahassee who really enjoy it as well, and a nice spot to go and wine with a glass of wine, which they also have on tap. Kind of cool there. So some good quality food and drink over there. They've been a loyal supporter of the Nolcast. We thank them for that. And at Matso, I tell you, man, really a great spot to watch the basketball game as well.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. The basketball team this year is actually worth talking about. When they're bad, we don't talk about them a lot because people don't want to hear that if FSU's not truly a basketball school. But when they're good, and more importantly, like when they're entertaining,
mm-hmm.
people do want to watch them. And this is a fun basketball team to watch. They actually score points, which is cool. And they do it while winning. They're not scoring 70, giving up 100. They're scoring 90 and giving up 75. And that's entertaining basketball and good basketball. I much prefer that over the old school winning 50-45 type stuff.
Exactly.
Occasionally they would do under Hamilton.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. It's a really, it's as good of a team, as talented a team as they've had. And aesthetically, it's as good of a product as they put out on the floor as far as just being able to enjoy a game. And you're right, not when 49-46 like they used to maybe 5 or 6 years ago when really they were as good as they've been. So it was an interesting dichotomy there of good results, product at times that was really hard to watch, but really fortunate with this new wave of talent that's come in over the past 2 years, really good players, and they're able to play a really attractive style of ball. So that is something that we'll talk about more on the podcast. But you're right, Madison Social very much lends itself to going in and taking in some of the ACC games, some of the road games. It's just a great spot in general. But do keep that on in the back of your mind as Florida State progresses through its basketball season. It's a great place to go and watch the Noles.
Absolutely. All right, man.
We'll just move our attention to the defensive side of the ball. Get into that conversation. Start with the defensive line, and just go ahead and real briefly recap what Florida State has committed, and then we'll talk about a kid that's very much emerged as a battle. The IMG kid that's the 5-star, 4-star defensive end, depending on where you look.
Sure. Okay. So defensive end commitments right now, Florida State has either 0 or 1, depending on how you look at their one kid who is a linebacker commit by the name of DeMarco Artis. Now, I think Artis is a fantastic player and a great job by FSU to identify someone who was initially committed to UCF and said, look, that's better than a UCF-level talent, right, what we're seeing. And then he went out and he had a huge senior season, great tape. I think he's more of a Jack-type player, so I should probably list him as a quote-unquote defensive end type. But, you know, He could play linebacker too, but I think he's kind of an end. Right now, it looks like Florida State's top target is Josh Kando. I know FSU went in home down there to IMG. Fisher and Alden, they've already visited the parents up there in the Mid-Atlantic region. I think his dad is in Pennsylvania area right now.
It's Philadelphia, I believe.
Okay. Which Penn State does not recruit real well for some reason. And I mentioned Penn State because Penn State is the primary competition for FSU in this. Kando, for a long time, was committed to Maryland, was really believing in the Maryland movement, but they just kept losing games down the stretch, caused him to doubt a little bit. 6 foot six, 255-looking pounds. Not the most explosive player, but I think he has the ability to play 4-3 defensive end, 4-2-5 defensive end at 280. You know, he can hold a lot more weight, and he has great length. That is a prototypical strong side defensive end, in my opinion. And I know maybe initially he was a little bit overranked maybe a year ago as the number one player in the country. That's tough to maintain that spot with so many good players out there. But there's no doubt he's at least a top 50 type player nationally. Ingram, if there's a concern here, right, and I think Florida State has the best shot to land him out of FSU and Penn State, it's that his mom really wants him to recommit to Maryland. And I don't think that's going to happen. However, I'm going to throw out a word here that's probably going to scare some FSU folks, and that's compromise.
Mm-hmm.
If mom really wants Maryland and the kid really wants Tallahassee, you know what might be a decent compromise there?
Happy Valley.
Yeah. So, we'll see. Not saying it's going to happen. I do like FSU's chances here. I think the two main things working against Florida State right now are, one, he really hates the Florida weather. I mean, legitimately hates the heat and has told me that multiple times. I've interviewed him, and I said, you know, hey, dude, is there any chance you stayed down here for school? This was like in April when he was, before he was committed to Maryland, but he's like, no, man, I'm a northern kid. I want to go back up north. I don't like the heat down here. It's uncomfortable. I was like, wow, okay. I was like, okay, is he saying this because it's hot as hell out here on this Orlando field in April at one of the Nike camps? Or does he really hate it? But I've heard that from IMG people too. Like, legitimately, he complains about the heat, doesn't like it. Now, I think he probably does like the scenery at Florida State, the campus, of course. And I think there's an ability to gain some early playing time if you're Kando, be that year one or year two. Josh Sweat is going to be a junior. You don't have a lot of other big-time, strong-side defensive end prospects on this team. I like FSU's chances there.
But when do you see this where does a potential decision come from Kando?
Well, he's an early enrollee, either at the All-Star game or maybe a little before. Florida State, I think they can early enroll and back count 7 or 8 kids in his class. And, of course, you can take more early enrollees than that, but you can't back count them to the previous signing class. So you may hear about this week or next week, depending. A lot of these kids are like, hey, I'm going to announce the All-Star game, and then they kind of flip, and they're like, actually, I'm just going to do it now. You know, it just depends there. I believe he's at the Under Armour game, but I got to double check that. Next kid on the list for defensive ends, Drez Parks out of Sebastian. Drez is a high 4-star defensive end prospect. Again, more of a strong side end that Florida State has a greater need right now at the strong side spot than they do at the weak side. This is a Bama-Florida State battle. Now, an interesting name here to watch is a kid named Isaiah Buggs, who's a junior college kid out of, I think he's playing his JUCO ball in Mississippi right now. Anyway, Bama has been searching for him recently. If Alabama gets Buggs, I don't know if they're going to have spots to sign every single player in the nation.
It's crazy. It's ludicrous, man.
Yeah.
Good for them. But they're no more recruiting than they are just selecting and roster management, really.
It's another level. It's really not even close right now. Ohio State is the only team that's even remotely close to them. I think there's a chance that Parks may jump at some playing time at Florida State as opposed to going and sitting and then maybe transferring out to a junior college once you get processed at Alabama. I like FSU's shot there, but I don't – it's tough to predict that a kid's going to come if a lot of your prediction is based on will Alabama have room, mm-hmm. you know? I don't know. By the way, you made a great point earlier. I wanted to point this out to you as far as sometimes when you're like the hometown team, you're not going to believe the noise, like with Cam Akers, that Florida State is really in this, you know? Especially not if you're an SEC-type media right. outlet where you're – even though this ACC just beat you, you may be a little reluctant to believe that they can actually come in and you know, take one of your top prospects out of the state. So maybe you're a little more apt to believe that LSU would. So, yeah, Parks is a Bama-FSU battle. There's not a whole lot to update there, I don't think. I like FSU's chances. Bama people like their chances. I just think it matters on class size, and we'll see. But if you are an FSU fan, you are actively rooting for Alabama to sign players that FSU's not recruiting because that eventually they will fill up. They can't take 40. They'll probably figure out a way to take 30 again. And the Mississippi Junior Colleges will be the beneficiary of that as they send a number of kids off. But
that's just crazy. Good for them. I'm not bemoaning what they're able to do right now at all. But
it does kind of make college football boring. I wrote about this earlier in the year, and I called it the inevitability of Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it hurts the sport when you have a team that's this dominant, and which we've never really seen in my lifetime.
It's as dominant as anybody's been since they adopted the 85 scholarship limit. As far as the way that they're able to manipulate their roster, you know what I'm saying by that?
Yes.
It's just incredible what they're. This isn't Bear Bryant signing a full class and signing 32 kids on the track team and 31 on the band team. I mean, this is just a different era, but it is crazy what they're able to do right now, and nothing you can do but tip your hat to them. And it's just incredible what they have able to set up. And yes, they work the system and they do everything possible. And maybe some things that other people wouldn't feel comfortable doing, but that's what they do. They're not particularly shy about it. And you're right. There will be some schools in Mississippi, some JUCOs that will be very much the beneficiary of kind of the ancillary products that don't work out within their official roster.
Now, Ingram, let's say something here. I think it's a positive sign for FSU, right? They were in on Jordan Wright, defensive end out of South Florida. They look to be kind of maybe backing off Wright a little bit. They were in on Owen Carney. It looks like they've backed off him hard. And they brought in Markel mm-hmm. Winters, the junior college kid, for a visit. Looks like they've kind of backed off really hard there.
Yep.
Why would you back off all these secondary targets?
It's a great point, Bud, and it's one of the best ways that you can kind of read the tea leaves of recruiting. It really is. The reason to answer your question is because you feel good about your primary targets. If you start to back off your secondary, that means you feel okay. It's when you're you know, 4 weeks from signing day and all of a sudden you hear about a two new offers going out to kids at particular positions that you can kind of realize that things may not be going your way with the products that or the positions and prospects that you hope to initially fill. So I think that's a great thing to point up and point out. And it is one of the best ways to kind of see what the real flow of information internally within a coaching staff and how they feel about their own chances of really signing a kid.
Exactly right. Now, with the Tyler Johnson kid out of Arizona, I don't think he's an early enrollee. So if FSU does miss on a Kendo, maybe they turn up the heat a little more for him. But I know they're still on Markavius Bryant, but I don't get the impression that they are getting that much traction with him. That they're not going hard on the secondary targets, you nailed it. It probably says good things about their defensive end recruiting, at least their prospects with these prospects. All right, two defensive tackles.
Let's do. So you got the two Gainesville kids that we've talked about, or two Gainesville area kids. Parks and Durden have been committed for a while. Probably the two best defensive tackles in the state in a year that is not a bumper crop for defensive tackles. But Bud, let us know what your thoughts are on them, or real briefly, and what remains on the board.
Well, I think that they are both really good prospects. They're not maybe like the most elite level prospects, but I mean, relative to the other available prospects in the state, they're superstars. Now, there's the kid out there, Jordan Scott, who was committed to Florida. Florida dropped him for allegedly weighing in at like 6 foot flat,
383. Nice, son. Now, that's
a source told me that he weighed in at 363 on his Louisville visit. So apparently he's lost 20 pounds in the last, I don't know, 6 weeks, which good for him just for general health purposes as well. Now, I had an ACC personnel director ask me where I thought Jordan Scott was going, and I said, I think he's going to Louisville. And he replied with an expletive, and he said, you know, blank, I really don't want to play that kid, you know? Which I think to me says that he certainly has some talent, but, you know, if you're a school like Florida State, I don't think you really want to take him right now. Given the weight issues, the lack of length, you can do better. Florida State is on some really elite level targets. Marvin Wilson, your kid out of Houston, who is the number one defensive tackle in the country according to Most. Again, I think he would be like the fourth or fifth best defensive tackle in last year's very special D tackle class. This year nationally, the D tackles are just not that good compared to sort of your annual national standard, but FSU has a very good shot to land Wilson. Some other teams in there, obviously. Texas trying really hard under Tom Herman. Ohio State likes their chances now, I've been told, especially because they already have Baron Browning, a fellow Texas five-star, in the bag. Looks like they already have Jeffrey Okuda. A lot of people think Okuda, by the way, is a silent commitment to Ohio State. We'll see about that. But Ohio State's in there. FSU's in there. I'm sure Alabama's going to, you know, try real hard for Wilson as well. That is just going to come down to signing day. I don't believe he's an early enrollee.
So Ohio State has very much kind of made the most of this power vacuum in the state of Texas with some of the programs having some uncertainty as far as the really elite prospects.
Correct. Yes. Yeah, they've been doing a really good job. And they are, you know, they've had a ton of success, and they have Urban Meyer, who is a beast of a recruiter.
Texas is interesting. It's always a state that you can go in and have some, you know, it's Texas can only sign so many kids, even when Texas is humming and at the top of their level. But like Michigan, when Michigan's at their best, they've always historically been able to go into Texas and pull a couple kids. Interesting that Ohio State's been able to make the most of that and get two of the better kids in the country.
I think the key is Okuda, right? He's a Jersey kid. He's not really from Texas, and thus I think it made him more receptive to going up north.
Right.
And once you get him, you know, he's a talker. He's going to be talking up Ohio State to his friends, if you believe the idea that he's a silent, which I do. I think that helps quite a bit. Now, Florida State has Dontavius Jackson on its side, the four-star linebacker they signed out of Texas last year, and who got to play a decent bit as a true freshman. So I'm sure he's helping them out with Wilson, but we'll see. Dalen Wade Perry is a kid out of Jersey. 335-pounder, looks like a nose guard, very nice prospect, four-star. But the issue is that he has grades, and normally that's a good issue. But in this case, he has perhaps Stanford-level grades, and likes Stanford a whole lot. We'll have to see where that goes. I know he's taking a visit out there. I think Florida State is probably riding shotgun to Stanford at this point. Aubrey Solomon, kid up your way in Georgia. I know FSU's trying to get in on him. I don't think that they really will gain much traction there, but he is an elite-level player as well. They're also still talking to Neil Farrell, who is a formerly committed to FSU, defensive lineman who then flipped to LSU when he got his offer. He's out of Mobile. I don't think Farrell's their top prospect right now, but if they started fading for Wilson and Wade Perry, they could probably make a move on him. That's sort of where they sit right now with defensive tackle, so it's certainly good to be in on a number of defensive prospects, elite prospects at that spot, but I don't know that I can definitively say they lead for any of them.
It's a good recap, Bud, and it's something that we'll watch. I mean, Wilson has been kind of the name at the top of the board and somebody that Florida State identified early. Tim Brewster's been involved from the beginning. And, yeah, I mean, if you could add any of those kids, Wilson in particular, to the Parks and Durden longtime commitments, that would be a solid class and a long way in kind of shoring up the internal components of that line once Naughty makes his decision and once you kind of cycle through Christmas and some of the other Christmas Jones, some of the kids that are turning into upperclassmen now. But as we ended the defensive tackle discussion with pieces and components that are already on Florida State's roster, let's start the linebacker talk there, as that may be as important as anything as far as the number of kids that Florida State looks to take and who exactly the prospects are that will ultimately make up their class. Let's go ahead and start the conversation at linebacker with a brief recap of what Florida State has on its roster and some of the pieces that are kind of in question moving into the 2017 season.
Sure. Well, I think one thing Florida State has to figure out is, are they going to get Shamar Kilby Lane back? Because he was ineligible this year due to grades. And then are they going to get Matthew Thomas back, who I think most people think should stay in school? But look, this is a kid who's already been academically ineligible once and has had numerous issues staying eligible, both drugs and academics. Is he going to be able to have the grades to come back for another season? You know, going back, there was a lot of rumors that the reason why James Wilder went pro is that he wasn't going to be eligible. You know, I don't know with Thomas. FSU's in the best spot to determine this, and sometimes it can be really tough to get information on kids' grades. It looks like Florida State would like to take two more linebackers. Now, I thought that they were looking at DeMarco Artis kind of as a jack, but new information has led me to believe they're looking at him at more of an inside linebacker type position. So, Adonis Thomas, my bad. Adonis Thomas, who was originally out of Georgia up your way, went to Alabama, got processed out. I had heard he didn't get along with Pruitt, the DC there at Bama. He goes to Mississippi, plays his junior college there, and now he, I believe, is going to be a three-to-play-three kid. They brought him in over the weekend, Florida State did, and I like FSU's chances to sign Adonis Thomas. He would be a welcome addition to the roster. They did end up giving him an official offer over the weekend, and I think he could make a decision very soon. JUCO National Signing Day is coming up, and he is an early enrollee. So 6'3", 6'4", about 220, good size there on the inside with some top-level athleticism. Commitments-wise, I already went over DeMarco Artis, who, like I said, is probably more of a jack. And then DeKalen Brooks, who is the son of Derek Brooks, three-star. Would he be in this class if he wasn't Derek Brooks' son? Probably not. But look, he is Derek Brooks' son, and he's sort of a borderline yes, no. So they went ahead and said yes, obviously, since he's Brooks' son. I think he is a smart football player, very instinctive, knows the game well, obviously, because his dad helps a lot with that. He could probably play in that money role that Nate Andrews plays a good bit. It's not really a true linebacker spot. It's not really a true safety spot. It's sort of a hybrid. And there's a place for him on this defense. I like where they sit at linebacker right now with respect to getting one more. If they need to get two more, Leonard Warner, I know they're still trying hard on. I think Georgia still feels pretty good there. Levi Jones is a kid out of Texas that I know Texas started fading with him once Herman got hired. LSU apparently trending with him, but we'll see. Maybe they get a shot there. I think what will happen probably, Ingram, is that they'll get Thomas, which I do think will happen. He'll sign early, and then they'll look around the country and say, okay, who signed early, who was unexpected, who did not sign early, who was expected to sign, you know, maybe some guys who are not going to be mid-year enrollees, and maybe they'll throw out another offer to kind of a late bloomer type, which does happen occasionally at the linebacker position.
Interesting to see. I mean, Warner's a kid we've talked about. I don't think Florida State's got a real big chance of landing that kid out of Brookwood here in the Metro Atlanta area. Adonis Thomas, that'll be a name that we watch. And anytime you get to sign a linebacker whose name stems from Greek mythology, I'll take it. And we'll happily plug him in and see what Florida State's able to get out of him. Particularly if that's a kid that has 3 years in the program, that would be a big get for them. Anybody else you want to mention at this position in particular before we move back to the secondary?
No, it is a position though that I'm going to be monitoring closely, given the fact that, well, I think they may want to take two. Mm-hmm. So we'll see on that. Guys on the roster, if everybody comes back, they don't need to take two. Thomas, Hoskins, Purifoy, who again, no idea if you're ever going to get anything from him after that devastating leg injury. Kilby Lane, Josh Brown, Emmett Rice, Ontavious Jackson, and they have artists committed.
Bud, you got a significant piece of information over the past 4 or 5 days if you're a Florida State fan. Not necessarily a commitment and not necessarily somebody that you were particularly worried about not ending up being a Seminole come the first Wednesday of February, but a nice little piece of information nonetheless, and that is that Stanford Samuels tweeted out, I think Friday, really the date is not too particularly important, but tweeted out that he's shutting things down, not going to make a trip to Athens, and is completely focused on making this 2017 class as good as it can be for Florida State.
Really never believed that he was going anywhere, but look, Samuels is a guy who I believe is going to contribute very early, even in a loaded secondary. He's a high-level corner. I think some sites have him rated as 5 stars. I would certainly have him rated as 5 stars. He's a legacy and someone who has been helping recruit for FSU for a while. Also, Cyrus Fagan, your safety commit, I believe reaffirmed. And you know, there was all this hubbub about Miami and all this stuff, and we did not buy into that on this podcast or on Tomahawk Nation, because we had been told by someone, and I couldn't confirm it with the school, obviously, but we've been told that he had already signed his financial paperwork. So I wasn't really worried once I knew that. That's a tremendous duo of defensive backs right there. Now, the problem is it used to be a trio.
Right.
With a guy named Daniel Wright, who...
Bama happened.
Yeah. Bama, they did their thing, and he couldn't turn it down. And you know, I wrote about this, and people were like, oh, it's a sour grapes and blah, blah, blah. And I said, look, at this point, if you're going to lose a kid to somebody, you'd rather have it be Alabama than, let's say, Georgia or Florida or Miami, because if you lose a kid to one of those programs, it might mean that you're slipping on a recruiting trail. And that's not a good thing. Lose a kid to Alabama, I don't think you learn anything about yourself. You just lost them to a better program. I mean, that's on one of the all-time great runs ever. You know, if and some people are like, well, what are you saying? Florida State's not on Alabama's level? Not recruiting-wise? No. Stop that foolishness. But they do need to get some other targets there. At corner, they're still in on Jeffrey Okuda. Again, I've said this numerous times. I don't really believe Florida State has a shot to sign him. Not a good one, at least. I think he's Ohio State. Many people, as we've already said on this podcast, believe he is a silent to Ohio State. I don't know of any other corners FSU is in on right now. And that's interesting because I look at this roster with corners, okay? Coming back, Marquez White's a senior, so he's gone. Malik Jackson is a non-contributor. Tavares McFadden's a starter. Marcus Lewis, I'm guessing you're going to move back to a strict corner. The idea to put him at star late in the fall camp was disastrous. Devontae Taylor, Kyle Myers. Carlos Becker has been playing more safety. You know, I think that taking two corners would not be the worst idea, given that you only have five on the roster. Although I guess you have a kid in Becker who could slide down to make six, and you have a lot of guys with some versatility. You know, I'm not against carrying seven corners. So if they could find another one who's FSU quality, maybe they do. Maybe that's somebody they offer later in the cycle. Safety-wise, Ingram, I think they're in a better spot to fill that second safety spot. You have Malik Gray, who's a four-star committed to Tennessee. He's supposed to visit in January again. He's supposed to visit before and hadn't always happened. We'll see if they're able to get him down. Hamza Nasruldeen is a South Carolina commitment, sort of a hybrid backer slash safety prospect. If she's trying to flip him, we'll see if they get him to visit. And then I think they have a pretty decent backup option in a kid named Dorian Hall, who is out of, I believe, South Broward High School. I like where they are at safety, given those three options. I feel confident that they'll be able to get one of those in the class.
Something to watch, and we'll certainly see how much they try to get on a just see who they try to get in the secondary at the end. I mean, we have an idea as to the two pieces that we talked about at the beginning of the conversation. Losing Wright, that certainly hurt, but not a complete surprise. It is something that has been talked about for about a month or so. So I would expect that the Florida State coaches had some idea that may be coming down the track and hopefully planned accordingly. So
yeah, I think they knew.
Maybe a place that you do see a name emerge a little bit later on in the cycle.
They felt good about their chances after Wright's visit to FSU, but it seemed like that high of the visit was sort of a fleeting feeling. And FSU was not caught off guard by him flipping. I will say that, according to my sources.
Yeah. Hopefully that was a pretty comprehensive conversation about where Florida State sits defensively and the prospects that may end up making consisting their 2017 class. Is there anything else that you particularly want to touch on before we call this conversation complete?
Well, yeah, I think there's a couple things. Number one, do you remember a guy named Jarrett Stidham?
I do, yes.
Did you see where he went over the weekend?
No, I didn't. I'd actually been looking at this and was not able to follow his decision over the weekend.
Probably a chance he's the most important recruit in the country, right? The former five-star QB out of Texas who was at Baylor for just a year, left when Art Briles was fired, went to a JUCO, did not play football this year, just did academics so that he could still have 3 years of eligibility. And Ingram, he committed over the weekend to Auburn. Not Florida.
Is a member of the Browse family going to be employed in Eastern Alabama as well? Or
there's not been an announcement yet. Okay. If you happen to see Kendall Briles, our son, shopping for condos in Montgomery, hit us up on the tip line. And that's a big deal, though, because, look, Stidham would go in and be a no-doubt starter and major upgrade over what Florida has coming back, in my opinion. I think he's just so much more talented than anything they have on that roster. That's probably, if he had gone there, I think he would probably have been worth a full win in win projections, right? So if you had Florida like 8-4, I think it would have seriously bumped him to like 9-3 had they got Stidham. That's a big miss, especially because Florida's quarterback, Jake Allen, got downgraded significantly. Now, to the 530th prospect nationally, number 23 in the pro-style quarterback rankings. He just hasn't progressed like you thought he would. And a team like his, St. Thomas Aquinas, with the talent they have there, it should score more points. And part of what was holding him back was the quarterback play. Mm-hmm. We've discussed this previously. If you take a kid like that from Aquinas, and you later realize you may want something different, it's hard to drop him because then you could poison the well with a lot of other Aquinas kids. So that's not an option. They did go ahead and offer James Blackman FSU's dual threat quarterback commit. We covered that in the last episode. Don't have a whole lot to update there. But the Stidham thing for Florida is extremely interesting. They did take a prep school prospect over the weekend by the name of Kyrie Campbell. He is a zero-star recruit. And look, zero-star does not necessarily mean bad. It just means has not been ranked yet. Typically, nobody gets zero stars unless, like, you or I were to go out and be evaluated. I know North Carolina liked the kid a lot last year, the Kyrie Campbell kid, but he didn't qualify. So that may be a good get for Florida, but they're recruiting wise, they're not doing that hot. I had to hit Page down twice to go find him on the 247 Sports rankings, which is not that good. Right now, if you look at it, Florida State's recruiting class is 13th nationally. And I made this comment last night when I was chatting with somebody. I said, look, this kind of reminds you almost of a Bowden class. I mean, Jimbo Fisher's staff rarely has this many kids left on the board this late in the year. And maybe they'll close really well. Maybe they won't. This is a major test for this staff. They didn't have the best of years, and that's the second straight year they've lost three times. So that's interesting. We'll see how they close, but they are going to have to close strong to get up in there. I think if they do close really strong, they have a chance to sign a top five, top six class. I don't think they'll catch Georgia. They're certainly not going to catch Ohio State or Alabama. But they could pass schools like a Clemson, Miami, Auburn, Michigan, Notre Dame, Texas A&M, schools that are in front of them right now. Miami is in front of them essentially based on the number of commits total, right? Miami has 5 4 stars and 16 3 stars. That's not a very good ratio. Florida State has 7 4 and 5 stars and just 6 3 stars. So that's what? 8 less commitments total, which sounds bad, but look, every kid you take counts against your cap. So you want to fill it up with quality, not just quantity. At this point in these rankings, a lot of the quantity-based stuff has been teased out, but I'm looking at this. Ingram, do you know the only two schools in the top 20, or only three schools in the top 20 right now to have 13 or fewer commitments?
I do not know that.
It's Florida State and USC.
USC is the other one.
Two schools who I would expect to close very well. Clemson, Washington, and Florida each have 14. We'll see how UF closes. But I do like FSU's shot to close with the top class in ACC again, and also to be above Florida, obviously, again. And that's a good sign.
Where do you see Clemson end in? Just broad, another top 10 class, in your opinion?
Well, yeah, I think they will. I don't think Clemson has as many top targets remaining that they have a real good shot at. They hit some home runs early in this cycle. I mean, the T. Higgins kid, in my opinion, is the best receiver in the country. Hunter Johnson is a 5-star quarterback. I love the A.J. Terrell kid they have at a Westlake there in Georgia. Amari Rodgers, I really like, especially for their system. I mean, he's, 5'9 and a half. 221 as a receiver, which sounds weird, but with the ball in his hands, he's extremely tough to tackle. I think Justin Foster is a really nice prospect as well for them. The Logan Rudolph kid at defensive end, he's really talented as well. They're doing a good job at Clemson, there's no doubt. Now, they're still taking a couple kids who are kind of, we'll see. But they've done a good job, and they continue to do so.
All right, man. I think that's a nice little recruiting conversation people be able to listen to, not too long, but informative. Hopefully bring you up to speed as far as where Florida State sits and what's left on their board as we move into kind of the final 45 days or so of the 2017 recruiting class. And but as we mentioned before, we'll try to put these out, these recruiting podcasts, probably have some sort of content for you every 10 days, if we are going to do an offensive and defensive breakdown, or we may just have bits and pieces of information combined with overall broader macro program talk. But something that we've always enjoyed, obviously want to leverage your rather immense knowledge of recruiting in general, particular all the context that you have as SB Nation's national recruiting advisor. And recruiting is something that I've followed since I was 9 years old, and I don't claim to have the the individual knowledge that you do on kids by any means, but it is something that I've always enjoyed and will try to provide any kind of historical context around it. So enjoyed it as always. Hopefully the audience took as much out of this as possible, and it's a conversation that I think we do fairly well, and we'll continue to have it leading up to signing day. Just waiting till the shine wears off.
Feel me now, listen. Mama loved me, Pop left me, Mickey fed me, Annie dressed me, Eric fought me, made me tougher. Love you for that, mama. No matter what, bruh, Marcy raised me, and whether right or wrong, streets gave me all I write in this song. Hootie babysitted, changed my diapers. Gil introduced me to the game that changed my life up. East Trenton grew me, had me skipping school. Valencia's boyfriend, Vogel, had me making moves. Mama raised me, Pop, I miss you. God help me forgive him, I got some issues.